continuing the story of Mel and Mel's Hole from just last Friday, December 20th. Here is Art and Mel Waters on the best of Coast to Coast AM.
From the high desert of the great American Southwest, good evening. The moon out there is full, the night's still and cold, and it's going to be a very interesting program, and so I suggest you strap in, turn up the radio, and get ready. Coming up in a moment, a surprise visit from Mel Waters. That would be Mel of Mel's Hole fame. A lot of people said he was dead. Recently, I've had some communication from people who thought he was dead. Well, he's not dead. He's here tonight, and he's going to fill you in on, you know, kind of what's happened since. Coming right up. Here from an undisclosed location, unless he wishes to disclose it, is Mel Waters. Mel, welcome to the program.
Well, hello there, Art Bell.
Welcome back to the program, is more like it.
Well, thank you. All I'll say is I'm in my nephew's apartment.
Okay. That'll do.
Okay.
All right, Mel, what we need is an update, if you have one, to Washington, an update, of course, on the whole here in my state, Nevada.
Right. Okay. First of all, I'm not dead.
That's a good thing, Mel.
And I did have a very, very, very close brush with death back around Memorial Day.
Maybe that's where people got
but
it.
But I am doing well, and I'm not yet ready to eat the big green wiener yet.
All right.
Anyway, yes, I do want to bring people up to date and let them know how things are going.
All right, good. Where to begin?
Well, I'm going to talk to you about kind of where we left off in Nevada.
All right.
I think that would be, is it Nevada or Nevada?
I say Nevada. I
wonder about that sometimes.
Just try either one. We'll answer
okay.
to it. Whatever.
Anyway, the one in your state here,
yes.
I told you that we had lowered a bucket of ice into the hole there in your state. And that
you don't want to tell us any more about where the hole is.
I think that might end up coming out here, or I think people will be able to discern where it is in your state.
All right.
I think a lot of people have got a very good idea, and I'm going to tell you that the location where the hole is at has been under helicopter surveillance almost I don't mean constantly, like 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
But there have been flyovers of that area
frequently,
like weekly.
Yeah.
But there's been no contact with the Basque that are there, that are encamped around there.
That's pretty odd, considering the military cordon that was thrown around the hole in Washington.
Well yeah, that is, and I've yet to discern how they were able to mobilize so quickly on that. That's still a great mystery for me.
Nevertheless, you said you were reminding us a bucket of ice.
Yeah, but one thing, when I said they have had flyovers of the hole there in your state, I was told something very interesting, and that is that from certain approaches to where the area that they're in,
yeah,
you can see the encampment of people. You could see the Basque if you're standing there, say, on the hillside, but you cannot see the flange around the hole. I told you that with this hole, there was like a metal collar.
That's right.
A flange around. You cannot see that from a certain distance. You can see everything else, and the flange is huge. It's a very large metallic structure, you know, that provides like a collar for this thing.
Mel, your opinion.
Yeah.
Does this hole go down somewhere near the center of the earth? I mean, how far?
Well, of course, you know, people know what my experience with it was, lowering all that fishing line into it, and I'm absolutely certain that I got 80,000 feet of line into it, which is, I don't know, 15 miles or so of line. That's a crazy thing to do, but I did. I'm just one of those people that are determined to get to the bottom of things.
Only you never did get to the bottom.
That's when I was at that level. That was my first contact with you. That, you know, when I reached that point there, that's when I said, I better reveal what I'm doing to the audience to find out what am I dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, and so this whole thing started. Well, let me tell you about what had occurred. You know, we lowered that bucket of ice. We pulled it up there. We had a bucket of ice up there at the surface. That bucket of ice at the surface had melted completely. We brought up the bucket of ice from a depth of, I believe it was 1,000 feet. Uh-huh. We lowered it down 1,000 feet. We brought it up. The ice was unmelted. So we stuck it on the campfire there in the metal bucket to see if we could melt it. Well, the thing caught fire, as I said.
The ice caught fire.
Ice caught fire, was burning. And it was a kind of a strange fire, but it generated heat. I don't know. I still, to this, well, I might be getting ahead of myself, but it must have been some sort of chemical reaction. Somehow the water was changed.
Yeah.
We actually touched the ice, you know, and it felt like ice, but not cold. And when we came, that's when we took it, you know, before we set it on fire.
Like ice, but not cold.
Right. I mean, it wasn't cold, and so was what was going on here? So we lowered it, we put it in the bucket. Well, I told you that it caught fire, and one of these bass fellows took the bucket of ice, set in the back of his pickup truck, drove off, and took it home and stuck it inside of his wood stove.
Had the ice been put out?
No. It was just kind of.
Well, I mean, he had it in his vehicle, wasn't it?
He just had it in the back of his pickup truck.
You're trying to tell me it was burning while it was in there?
Yeah. Well, he wanted to take it home and put it in his wood stove and see if it would keep him warm.
So he did that.
Yeah, well, the Basque are kind of crazy people. Are you in any way familiar with the Basque in general or specific or just kind of heard of them?
No, of course I've heard of them, but I mean, no.
The Basque are very well known in your state. In fact, the university up there of Nevada at Reno has a huge section on the Basque.
I bet, yeah. He took it home. Not that weird. I mean, it was burning.
Yeah.
Ice burning is weird.
Yes. And he took this home and set it in his wood stove, and it kept them toasty warm throughout the winter.
Throughout
the winter, and for
you're telling me this one piece of ice.
Well, what we did is in this bucket, metal bucket, we stuck in a bag of like 7-Eleven ice, you know, the kind that you buy at the store, you know, ice cubes.
Yes,
that's what it was. That's what we put in there. Nothing else. Just the metal bucket, lowered down into this hole. We get it and we stick it on a fire, and it's burning. Okay, so anyway, this goes on for quite some time, and he sets it in his wood stove, keeps them warm, and I imagine that today it'd still be burning or is burning. I have no.
The last you heard, it was still going.
Well, you know, we're going to go to probably what Paul Harvey says the rest of the story here, because this is what I've been told.
All right,
he says, you know, when you have a wood stove. And you're burning wood, you generally will put a kettle on top of that wood stove.
Yeah.
And, you know, to have hot water for coffee and to humidify the air.
Sure, whatever.
You know, it dries out the air terribly. Well, this Basque fellow, he just did just that there, and he noticed there that the air was, like, really, really dry. He was always thirsty, and his skin was, like, flaking. I mean, this was like, I don't know, he must have been living in humidity lower than what you face out there in the desert, you know. And so, you know, he's got this kettle up on top there, you know, trying to humidify the air. And one night he notices that, I don't know, it might have been the angle of the light or just whatever it was, but the steam from the kettle looked like it was being absorbed into the stove. And we're not saying, like, through the vents or, you know, through the door or whatever.
Wait a minute. The steam from the kettle, which would have been going up, would be coming back down and then absorbed by the stove.
Yeah, it was like dispersing and then coming around and just like, I guess the word to describe is lingering around, but it looked like it was being absorbed by the stove. That's the, I think that's the best picture I can
see. Now, that's weird.
That is strange.
Of course, this is already really weird. We've got ice that's burning eternally so far, And that's, I can picture it.
Okay, so I mean, I want to be able to, because this is what I've been told, but I have absolute belief in, you know, the person that told me this, this goes on. Anyway, you know, the stove is out there, and it's producing heat, and this guy is real happy, and even though he's, like, real thirsty and really dry, you know. And then one day, this guy comes home, you know, he goes out and does his thing, and comes home, and he notices that the stove had crashed through the hearth and through the floorboards of his cabin.
What?
It just, like, went right down. It just broke. I mean, you know, it was kind of a flimsy cabin, you know, but it was able to support the weight of his wood stove and his,
So now the stove with his eternally burning ice is now through the floor.
It's in the ground. It's actually on, like, the dirt. Maybe it
Oh.
fell like about a foot into the ground at that point.
I wonder if this thing is going back from whence it came.
Well, that's what I want to know, and we're going to continue along with this here. But anyway, the stove is sitting down there. Now, this guy, you know, sometimes I wonder about these guys, but, he's not too bright. So what he does is he patches up the stove pipe.
Yeah.
And so it connects to the chimney, where the flue, all that stuff there.
Yeah.
And he's kind of living in this cabin with this stove.
You mean he's still using the stove?
Yeah,
He just extended the pipe?
Yes, that's exactly what he did.
You
know, he just kind of lowered it down there. And as far as I could tell, though, it doesn't give off any gas or any no smoke or anything.
He made no attempts to bring it back up to fix the floor and do it right, huh?
No. No, he didn't. He continues to live with it, about, a week, maybe 2 weeks later, he comes home, and the entire cabin has collapsed.
What?
Around the whole thing.
The whole thing?
Everything has collapsed around it. In fact, all there is around the side of the cabin is piles of wood dust.
So, in other words, his cabin disintegrated.
It basically looked like all of the moisture that was in the wood had been sucked out of it completely to the point that it could no longer exist as wood.
Wow. Okay. Now, this is pretty interesting, because so far it's pretty consistent, that's for sure. This thing reabsorbed its own moisture. It absorbed so much moisture, this man had terrible skin trouble. Still, he kept it going. And now he absorbed all, all the moisture out of the wood.
He had wood furniture in there, his bed and a chair or whatever.
Yep.
Wood dust. You could see the different colors of wood dust. And at that point, he abandons the cabin and gets the heck out of there.
Understood.
He says, hey, enough is enough. So he moves in with one of his brothers.
Yes.
And they were over there, and about a month later, he goes back to the cabin to show it to his brothers, and they find that the stove had sunk to, 5 feet into the ground.
This thing's on its way.
It's 5 feet into the ground, and it is still generating heat.
And still going.
And, at that point, all the dust had blown away, and, you got a few nails around there. And what you have is a rectangular hole, just a little bit bigger than a stove. So can you imagine a rectangular wood stove sinking into the ground, leaving its imprint? And there's a little bit of room around it, but not a lot. And, he described that the hole that it made was also really, 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 really smooth all around it. You think of a hole in dirt.
Like it's burning its way through.
It's melted into some sort of glassy type.
Maybe it's doing the same thing, and it's taking away all the moisture in the soil below it as it goes.
This is the point where the Basque fellow contacts me.
Okay.
And they have a way of getting a hold of me. And I say something that I probably shouldn't say on the air, but
something like holy smokes.
Well, yeah, that would be it.
Uh-huh.
Holy smokes. Then I did something which I thought I would never do.
What?
And that is, I contacted one of the people that were my contacts when I was in Australia.
Okay,
I had a number, and I described the situation to this guy here, and he pretty much said the same thing that I said, holy smoke. And he tells me it's really important that I tell him where the cabin was.
Of course.
And how to get to it.
Well, I mean, after all, Mel, this is, before it disappears from sight into a creation of a new hole, this is something that could be immediately researched.
Well, so I talked to the Basque, and all the land that I'm talking about is on public land. So the cabin, the guy's like a squatter out there, out in the boondocks. He's got a shack that, if it burned down, he wouldn't care about it. He'd just put up another one, a couple of feet away.
Gotcha.
But he decides, okay, well, there's no way to really trace me, to here, so I'm not going to get any trouble. So we say, okay, I get back with this guy here. This is exactly where to find it, tell him how to get there. And so at that point, there's a team dispatched to the site of the former cabin.
A team
of people show up there.
Way to go.
And now this guy, this Basque fellow there, he's got a nice vantage point. He knows all the land around there. He knows where he can sit out there and squat and look around. So he's got a pretty good view of where his cabin used to be, so he's out there, you know, watching what's going on.
Yes.
Now, he said he wasn't sure if they were military guys or what kind of guys they were. I would imagine that some of them had to be scientists of some sort. And, you know, they're out there for a while, and shortly after that, there's like a bunch of heavy-duty construction equipment, cranes, and things that are brought out there.
Here we go.
Yeah. And then, this is like, you know, big, big stuff, you know, super, super big stuff. But, you know, he's up there and he's watching this, and the people down there at the cabin are really, like, struggling to get this stove out of the ground.
Yeah.
And at that point, I assumed that it sunk even deeper than it, you know, than it was. And that last time he said it was about, like, 5 feet deep. So this thing was pretty deep out there. They keep on bringing it in heavier and heavier and heavier equipment, bigger cranes. They bring in multiple cranes. They're still, I guess, not able to get a purchase on this thing to lift it out.
Hey, Mel, I wonder if this is the way the holes got made in the first place.
I do not know what, you know, what the mechanism here is.
Because so far, what you've described sounds like it's making a new hole.
From that standpoint, it sure as heck does. And, I mean, you know, obviously this thing is sinking deeper and deeper into the ground, and they are, you know, it's like a total, you know, they're totally baffled at how to get this thing out here. I assume that when they're trying to bring it up there, that they're breaking off pieces of the stove because, you know, it's made out of cast iron or whatever, it must be busting up there, that the thing
sure
is really heavy. Well, eventually what they do is they drop some chains into the ground, and then they pour some water in there. To the ground.
Yeah.
and I don't know if this is what happened, but this is what I assumed happened. Is somehow the water and the chains and the metal all congealed together, you know, kind of like held fast like glue to the structure and everything that was in the hole.
Yeah.
Well, eventually they were able to get this thing out of the ground and hoist it up, and they were using more than one crane at this point. Now, I don't know a lot about cranes, but usually they could pick up a lot of stuff. They had several cranes working on getting this thing out, so it must have weighed some huge amount.
God,
talking like
fascinating. So the weight alone would have broken it through the floor. The weight certainly would
initially, yeah.
Wouldn't have dug the hole, though. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, and so... So they finally get this thing out of the ground using multiple cranes, the biggest ones they can get. This guy said these things were like monster cranes. They get it up, and they load it onto the biggest truck this guy had ever seen in his life. I mean,
yeah.
This was bigger than big, and they haul that thing away. It is like gone, you know, there it is over there. You know, and so they just took the stove away. I don't know if he got a good look to see what the stove looked like, but they loaded whatever was in there, detached the chains from the hooks and stuff, and trucked this thing off.
All of this, in essence, just to get this burning ice, really?
That's what they got. But this guy here, as soon as I talked to him, he knew something was going down, and something had gotten, well, my impression was it had gotten, like, out of control.
And all of this just from something you lowered into the hole here in Nevada.
That is correct.
Aye. All right. Hold on. Hold it right where you are, Mel. We're going to break here. We'll be right back. Current circumstances of the world considered, you should listen to the words of this song. Because it's dead right. From the high desert, I'm with Mel Waters, and I'm Art Bell.
Gonna